Welcome to the Cyan of Rican podcast. I am one of your hosts, Cyan of Flame.
And I'm Throwhead Rican.
The point of this podcast is to kind of highlight all the hobbies and interests that we have so that we can talk about things that we've enjoyed, things that we want to criticize, and really just like bring that wealth of entertainment to a wider way and really talk about what we love. We're huge fans of wrestling, comics, anime, cartoons, video games, a wide variety of subjects. So there's always different kind of things that are going to hit different people. So, you know, jump in with anything that you enjoy. Today we're going to be talking about the Royal Rumble pay-per-view from 2015 that just aired a couple days ago. Royal Rumble's always been one of my favorite pay-per-views myself. It's just such a unique match, and it was created in such a unique way and everything. There had never been a Battle Royal quite like it before. Royal Rumble was made by Pat Patterson, right, Regan?
Oh, yes. It was invented by Pat Patterson. I can't remember exactly the year it was, but it came from him. The birth of the Royal Rumble match came from him. He wanted, you know, to have, like, some type of different event that was... At the time, nothing else was like it. I mean, there still isn't. I don't think there's any other promotion that has any type of match that even resembles the rules and or format of the Royal Rumble.
Yeah, the Royal Rumble began in 1987, I believe, was its first year. Because I know Royal Rumble 20 was 2007, so I believe it started in 1987. Mm. I assume there was some sort of conversation between Vince and Pat Patterson, where Pat Patterson's like, Vince, I got a great idea for you. I got a great match. We're going to take the ring, 30 guys, all together.
I can only imagine the look on Big Man's face, knowing Pat Patterson going like, really, Pat? Really? You want 30 guys in the ring?
30
at
guys.
At the same time? Come on, stop it.
No.
And then eventually, you know,
You start with two. Every minute, another guy joins in. What?
it sounds horrible. Just pitching it sounds horrible. But I love the format of the match. I like that it's structured and almost like seen as how it goes before WrestleMania. And WrestleMania is kind of like the Super Bowl of wrestling. I like that Royal Rumble has like that format where it feels like a true sport, and if there's like a crescendo to it, you know, like it's going to last this long, it's going to have this many people, and there's definitely going to be a winner, and then that winner, eventually they made the rule that the winner would go challenge the champion at WrestleMania and go to the main event. So, I like everything about it. I like everything.
When was it that first began? Was it WrestleMania 8 where they first had the rule where the Rumble winner would go? Is that
one? Oh, no, it was much later.
That was the one?
I think
Yoko was the first Rumble winner to get to go for the title.
It might have been, yeah. It was a while after, because the Rumble before was just kind of like bragging rights. You know, it was kind of like, here's your Royal Rumble winner. Kind of like how they did with Cesaro and the Andre the Giant Memorial. Like, it doesn't have... There's nothing tangible.
Yeah, Hogan was in the Rumble, like, as champion a few times.
Exactly, yeah. So there's... Yeah, it didn't have that... What's the word I'm looking for? Stipulation. It didn't have the stipulation until way later.
Yeah, I believe it came in with WrestleMania 9, which would have been like 1994 or something like that. But I know it's been going full force with the Rumble winner getting the title shot since at least 99, because I think that's when Rock won, or quote unquote won, and they had to do the WrestleMania 2000 Fatal 4-Way.
Okay, I think, yeah, I honestly can't remember, but let's, like, get ahead of ourselves. All that matters is that the Rumble historically has been a really good match. I don't think anyone's ever complained about the quality of a Rumble match, other than, like, for example, what we're going to talk about today, the people who win sometimes aren't the people that the fans want, and that definitely happened last year with Batista. And it definitely, well, it happened this year with Roman Reigns, but for a different reason. And I think when we get to that, we need to explore why that reason is.
Absolutely. Before we move on to the actual event, I kind of want to talk about what you mentioned a second ago, how you said that the Royal Rumble is unique. There's no other wrestling promotion out there that has a Royal Rumble. And I think that that is a good point, because there are other things, like the Survivor Series match. Other companies will have, you know, a big setup of elimination tag matches. Other companies will try to, you know, rip off the Hell in a Cell and be like, Six Sides of Steel or something like
right,
that.
Right, right.
Or even
the Survivor Series match, like the you know, 4-on-4 or 6-on-6. Like, I've seen variations of that in other federations. Mm-hmm. Never seen another type of Royal Rumble.
Even Money in the Bank, I just recently saw on TNA, they had this thing called Feast or Fired. And yep. It's basically Money in the Bank, but instead, like, there's four winners, which
right.
was really weird.
Yeah.
But like, one person gets fired just for opening it.
Yeah.
We'll eventually get to the TNA episode.
eventually.
Which is just going to be, like, 2 hours of me crying about...
Yeah, 2 hours of you crying and me saying, I told you so, I told you so, I told you so.
Maybe we'll tie that in with some Lucha Underground and...
there you go. And, just to counterbalance it.
And maybe even, like, an episode of ROH or something like that.
I could get behind that if I could ever find where the hell they air ROH nowadays.
I have no idea where they do it. I actually... I'm somewhat interested in picking up, like, the DVD or something that they released of that Wrestle Kingdom where Stryker and JR called the Jeff Jarrett New Japan pay-per-view.
Mm-hmm.
The way they were talking about it sounded really interesting. I just wasn't able to watch it on pay-per-view just due to timing and stuff, but it sounded really interesting. Plus, I want to see if JR still got it.
Right.
We all know Stryker still got it.
Stryker still does have it. I can't believe he was fired. I still can't, to this day, I don't understand why they fired him or let his contract expire, and why they didn't keep him in the announcer booth.
Well, he seems pretty bitter about it, so my assumption, just from the way that he tweets, my assumption is that it was something more on pettiness and bullshit of the old boys club and everything.
Right, right.
Kind of like it ended up being when they let go of Justin Roberts, you know?
Seriously. That one actually kind of...
Stung.
Miffed me. Yeah, that one stung me. Like, okay, CM Punk walking out, whatever, that's his decision. That's him walking out of the company. Justin Roberts being let go because of meh reasons... Like, it really was mad reason.
He had an argument with Cole.
Right, like, it's so... It's the little high school bullshit that sometimes makes me not like the company. If it wasn't for the fact that consistently their product...
Out there.
Yeah, like there's no other choice. Like, they have kind of like a monopoly. There's ROH is good, pure wrestling. But if you want a combination of pure wrestling and good storytelling, when they decide to give you good storytelling, they give you really good storytelling.
So if you want sports entertainment?
Yep, if you want sports entertainment, it's the only one. No one else comes close.
But
if you want
ring,
this wrestling...
Pro wrestling, damn it.
JR is having a stroke right now for just hearing us.
Oof. Don't say that. That's like saying Kevin Nash is having a quad right now. That's just not kind.
Wakes up, has a quad injury.
Eat, sleep, tear quad, repeat.
Yep. oh, we need those shirts.
The way back. But, no.
But anyway, this Royal Rumble, like, I was just noticing something about the card. And it's something I was pointing to out to you earlier, mm-hmm. is that every match in this Royal Rumble was a tag match, except for the Rumble proper and the Triple Threat. Everything else, including the kickoff, was a tag team match. What's that all about?
I think it was a way of having some people, because they had a lot of people repeat and be in multiple matches. Actually,
right.
not a lot of people. They just
they had a couple of people who, yeah, they had a couple of
just
people.
Just Miz and Miz Dow, and then Cesaro was definitely in it. Kofi was in it. Did Big E enter the Rumble? Big E entered the Rumble.
He did, yes, he
yeah.
did.
So it was just the pre-show and Miz and Miz Dow people who all went into the Rumble after having a match earlier. I think it was kind of a way of being able to have them showcase in their own match, but still have the time to go in, take a second spot. Because I assume you aren't as worn out from a tag match as you would from one-on-one.
Right. Yeah, true. I mean, because there's a lot of wrestling in between, unless you're, like, the heel of a tag match and, you know, you have to, like, work, you know, a wrestler over for a long time and, you know, you usually have the offense and you're there for most of the match.
Oh, you mean, or even, you mean like the belt that fit to Natalya?
Right, yeah. Like, or even if you're like the, or in that example, being the face in peril, because that means you're taking, you know, the abuse throughout most of the match. So you're going to be probably a little bit sore. So I'm actually amazed that The Miz did his match and then entered at number one. You would think they'd give him a little more rest, because I think he was...
Yeah, it was only about 30 minutes later that he...
Yeah, like, it was... Yeah, it was about... Yeah, no, it was... Actually, you're right, it was about 30 minutes later.
Then again, he was only in for about 4 minutes, and he's the damn Miz. I mean,
yeah, yeah. I'm awesome. The Miz, and I'm awesome. The Sign and Regan podcast is strictly pro-Miz, no.
Oh, I'm savagely pro-Miz.
Yeah, savagely.
I am purely and never, ever not going to be on the Miz train for two reasons. A,
what's that?
He locked down Maryse, and props on that. and B, that video package before his title match against Cena.
The Nas, yeah.
With Nas.
Yeah, you can hate me now.
That's, like, my favorite Nas song. And B, that was the most perfect melding of song with promo package of all time. Like,
yeah, and not only that, but it was I think it was one of those few times where the heel was right in the sense of, like, oh, you guys can all hate me, but I worked for this. And he was absolutely 100% right. Like, people hated him for
this is
for
story.
Something that he earned.
Miz's story, if you look at, like, his real-life story...
He's
like,
a face.
That should be, like, the biggest face underdog succeeded, mm-hmm. I love this guy story ever.
Yeah.
Like, he worked indies. He did. Like, people always say, like, oh, you just did tough enough and you were able to, like,
even if he...
It's like, he did do indies.
Yeah, and even if he didn't, it doesn't matter. He still had to go up the entire... He went through every single phase.
Yep.
Of the WWE. He went through Tough Enough, Developmental, he went through the tag team phase, he went through singles titles, because he did a U.S. title, I think, and the Intercontinental, right? Then he did tags again.
An IC champ, but he was definitely...
Yeah, IC.
He was definitely U.S. champ, but...
Right.
Yeah.
So he did, he kind of, like, went, you know, he went up the ladder, and then finally he got the world championship, and when he did the media rounds, which a lot of champions do not do. A lot of the champions just aren't comfortable. Daniel Bryan, for example, not very comfortable with doing the media rounds. Like, he's not a media rounds type of guy.
Miz will do every media round. Like, he's always doing radio shows. He's always doing interviews. He did, like, the Regis and Kelly and Michael morning show, all sorts of stuff like that. Like, Miz was really... Miz works, like,
yeah. Oh yeah, he again. I think a lot of people, it's easier to hate him than it is to go.
Well, it's because he's a great heel.
Yeah, and his gimmick now.
Like,
his gimmick now is hilarious.
I mean, Johnny Cage, like, villain Johnny Cage. It's,
yeah. But anyway, so how's about that first? We're not going to talk about the kickoff unless you want to. Like, if you want to talk about the kickoff, feel free. I really didn't care.
I don't really have too much to say about the kickoff. I mean, I would still like to see the New Day kind of grow into being, like, a reason that I should care about them and everything. They either need to go full comedy or they need to go, you know, full serious and everything.
Yeah.
Like that. But they're doing this tweener, but not in the, like, heel face tweener. They're solidly face. It's just I don't know whether to take them seriously or not. And it's starting to just make him waffling and silly.
Right.
Cesaro, he's still kind of finding himself. Tyson Kidd, I think he's in kind of the perfect spot as being, like, a consistent, like, A-match feeder for the NXT people, because it keeps him relevant enough because they're making NXT matter by having it be kind of the marquee show of the WWE Network that you can only see on the WWE Network. And he's a tremendous worker, but... due to size and talking ability, he's never going to be, like, I don't know, maybe one day he could be IC champion, but, I mean, that door is even starting to close down and everything as time rolls on. Right. So, just due to, like, various factors, he probably won't have too much more, so him eventually getting an NXT title run or just being a consistent person to make these future guys amazing, he's got a great spot, and he does tremendous matches. So that's really all I have to say about the pre-show.
Right. And again, it wasn't like a bad match or anything. It's just I'm very disinterested in the New Day. Like you said, I want them to become something more than just like the gimmick that it is. Like either go full comedy or go full militant seriousness with it. Like make it something else. You know, don't make it what it is currently. Because right now it's
be just preachers. Like their gimmick is they're talking. Be preachers. Be Al Sharptons. Like that would be so great to watch and everything.
Especially with Big E. Big E can do that gimmick. He did it in NXT, and I think I don't know if he did it before NXT, but I know in NXT he had like a little. He had a moment where he would do promos in that kind of like a preachy voice. And it was hilarious.
Oh, yeah.
So I kind of want him to go back to that and fully commit to it, or if they let him. I guess there's that, you know, like creative has to let them unwind, or they have to put in ideas for them to let them unwind. But right now, don't really care. I really don't care for Cesaro and Tyson Kidd being together. I don't care for Cesaro as a tag team wrestler. I want Cesaro to finally have his singles run.
Yeah.
Someone in the back needs to quit and just fully commit to pushing him. And he needs to, I don't know what it is that he did. I don't know if it's him just being kind of snobbish and dickish. And you know what? If that's it, make him a full-blown heel and feed off of that dickishness then.
It might also be, there was some interesting stuff. Dr. Tom Pritchard talked with Colt Cabana a couple weeks back on his podcast, and one of the things he talked about was they're really talented, fantastic wrestlers that aren't able to get a major push once they go to full WWE because they don't seem to really talk to people and kind of ask for advice. They don't walk up to, you know, John Cena or Randy Orton or Taker and kind of ask what they can do to get better in matches.
Right. Or even the road agents, like just talk to like Dean Malenko. Dean Malenko. Like,
right. Like, yeah.
Talk to Dean Malenko. If someone knows wrestling, it's Dean fucking Malenko.
So maybe, I mean, I'm not saying that Cesaro needs to work on any of his matches, because, I mean, his matches are A-plus already.
Right, I think he needs to work on his character more than
it's just kind of touching with the people in power to kind of get the momentum to push forward and everything like that, because they kind of said that Seth originally wasn't big on kind of talking to people, but look at him now. I mean,
yeah, exactly, and Seth, oh my god, like, when we talk about that triple threat, We'll get to that at some point. When we talk about that triple threat, I want to mention there's a lot of things. I had a lot of revelations during that match. One of them being Seth Rollins realizing that he's in a main event with Brock Lesnar and John Cena, and he doesn't look out of place.
Right?
Does not look out of place. Seth Rollins has become the new Edge. He's right now, he's Adam Copeland. He's Adam Copeland.
Oh, don't be that guy.
Yeah, nope.
Don't be that guy who's like, I know their real name.
I'm just saying, like, Seth Rollins, like, he is Edge. Like, he's basically Edge.
Good. So, Edge. There we go. All right, so actually opening the show, oh, you didn't know? We had the New Age Outlaws facing off with the Ascension. I like seeing the New Age Outlaws back, and I have to say, of anybody who was wrestling in the Attitude Era, I think the New Age Outlaws probably look in the best shape of all of them.
Let's like, I think they mentioned
the fact that
like
Billy Gunn's like 50 years old. And
Billy
he
Gunn,
good.
Yeah, Billy Gunn. When I was watching the match, I was like, I forgot. Like, I was like, isn't Billy Gunn in his 50s or his late 40s? I know he's up there. I know he's well past his 30s because I'm in my 30s, and he was in his 30s when he started. I think so.
Billy Gunn is 51.
Dude, Billy Gunn is 51 and he's performing at that level.
And looks that good and moves that good and everything.
Yeah.
He still landed everything.
Yeah, exactly. Like, he was pretty crisp. And, I mean, no, there's nothing about against Rodog, but Rodog was always kind of like the lesser fit guy.
Rodog wasn't like the show guy, but he could talk and he could still move. And even in this match, Rodog was pretty good at, you know, rolling around and hitting everything. He did his little, you know, snake rattle and roll.
Yeah, yeah. The elbow and everything, yeah. Like, I like the match, one, for nostalgia, and two, because I know what they're doing with the Ascension. I think they want to do a proper build. They want to start from the very bottom with them. Like, in NXT, they dominated, and they had a long, almost a year-long title reign. That's fine. Most WWE fans, especially the ones that don't have the network, which is quite a bit, as we found out the numbers recently, or the new number, I should say, they don't know who these people are. They just know that they're two guys that kind of look like Legion of Doom, and they have silly face paint, and that they have a really kick-ass metal theme song.
You know, I can dig the face paint on the sides of the faces, and I get why they have the triangle, but I don't like the red triangles on the foreheads. It's dumb.
Yeah, exactly. So
I love the thing they do with the eye to make it Illuminati. I think the face paint over the eyes, stick with that. The triangle on the forehead, it just looks dumb.
Yeah. So I get what they're doing. I understand. This was kind of like a glorified squash match, because by the time the match began, like started picking up the pace, that's when they did the finisher, the Fall of Man, and it was over. And, you know, Ascension beat the New Jot Loss, which, by the way, that was the only real outcome. Like, if you had Ascension lose to the New Age Outlaws, that would have ruined whatever plans they had.
Why would you bring up the Ascension?
Yeah, why bring him up? Exactly. I mean, like, if you want to have him fight against the Legends to get a little, you know, get a little hazing in and, you know, get them acclimated to the format of WWE proper versus NXT, that's fine. But have them beat them. You can't have them lose against the old timers. You just can't, because it's gonna ruin whatever it is that they have planned for them. And judging from what they did in NXT, they have something planned for them. They have to.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I mean, the Ascension are fantastic, and a few of the places that I frequent in the IWC were kind of shitting all over the Ascension and everything that they were dumb and their gimmick is whack and that they're not being, you know, built very strong. And I argued against it. I was like, what are you guys talking about? Their first match, their debut, they beat the former champions. They beat Miz and Mizdow, like, immediately. And everything. And then they've won every match since. Like, you're getting an undefeated build, them squashing everybody. But because, like, they didn't come out on their first night and win the titles, you're like, they're not very strong? Like, what do you want?
Yeah, I don't understand. And when we get to the Royal Rumble match, because I think that's where the IWC kind of lost their collective minds. And the Philly crowd. Fuck you, Philly. There's something.
Make it trend. Hashtag fuck you, Philly.
Yes. Oh, it's happening. something happened during the Rumble match and you know, with the Ascension. The Usos, not so much. I think Philly has accepted the Usos. They understand what their role is. They understand, you know, how they operate and, you know, how their matches are supposed to go. And I think that's why they didn't, like, shit all over them when they won. Because you know how Philly tends to like heels more than faces. They didn't boo the Usos, which I was afraid of. I thought they were going to, when we say ooh, you say oh, and they were going to go, fuck no, or something like that. I really thought that
Oos,
the Philly
crew. No.
Yeah, oohs, no. Yeah, I thought that they were going to shit all over them, but they didn't. So it's not so much that they're a pro heel crowd, it's just that they're bipolar, I think.
Well, I mean, you can't really claim that a town that completely shuts down when the biggest face around loses is a pro heel crowd.
Right. Complete, yeah. Yeah, and they're very pro Daniel Bryan, so I mean, I know that they're not all about the heel, but we'll get to that, like I said. But yeah, good match, the Ascension versus the New Age Outlaws, the first tag match of many for the night.
And moving on, speaking of the Usos faced Miz and Mizdow for the WWE Tag Team Championship in the rematch. The Usos are always weird to me. Like, they don't get over. They get some response, but, like, I've yet to meet somebody who really cares about the Usos.
Right.
They always have good matches, but it's always the same good match.
Right.
Like, so I can't really hate on it, and I see them, and at times it's even like I have that long-time wrestling fan memory.
Mm-hmm. So, right, like you remember shit that you shouldn't remember.
Yeah, so, like, I see The Miz hit the skull-crushing finale, and I'm like, that move beating John Cena and everything.
Right.
And then Jey Uso kicks out of it, and I'm like, how the fuck did Jey Uso just kick
right,
out
like,
of it?
Right, like, the power levels aren't quite right.
Exactly.
I know what
but,
you're saying, yeah.
But he kicked out of it and everything, so it makes me go, wow, they're stronger than I thought. Like, that's
right.
Really cool that they're letting them kick out. They're letting them have, like, the big match that this actually
right.
matters type thing. But at the same time, it's like there's not enough being done to make me really feel that they belong at that level.
Right. And that's one of those things where I think, I don't know if it was Mick Foley or JR that says that, you know, the best matches are the ones where both people, like, both the heel and the face, or, like, the heel team and the face team, when you look at them and they're in the match, you're supposed to believe that either one could win. Like, you should never go, like, oh, this is going to be a squash match. Like, that should never happen. If it happens, it's because it's by design.
Yeah, but, like, the Usos will win when I go into the match and I go, like, the Usos should lose this, like, immediately, because...
Right, but then they win, and you're like, oh, shit. Like, you know, it should be more even. It really should be more even. That's why when the eventual confrontation of the Usos and Ascension happens, they need to be either fully equal, or the Ascension needs to plow through them. That's the only two ways that this is going
to
work.
Well, the Ascension needs to beat them when it happens.
Right. Oh, yeah.
They get there, and I think that'll be a WrestleMania pre-show.
You think so? And honestly, it shouldn't be a pre-show.
WrestleMania
really don't think
hates the tag matches.
Like, it does. Because the best tag matches that have happened at WrestleMania have happened
on the
pre-show. Because I still remember there was an Uso match versus the Colognes, and I can't remember. It was like a four-way tag match. It was a great tag match. I think it was WrestleMania 20. The one in Florida. Between Rock and Cena, the first one, I think.
The
Pretty
one
sure
Florida
was,
would have been 28.
Okay, so I think it was WrestleMania 28. Great fatal four-way between tag teams. Didn't get to be on the air. It was just pre-show. I don't get that.
Yeah, it's weird. It's weird for sure. But it was a good match. Lots of Miz Dow pops. Miz Dow is over, and
can we? Yeah, I was gonna say, like, is there any doubt that Miz Dow is over? No,
I've said before that I do not share this, and I do not get it. Like, this is one of my disconnects. That
right?
The marionette thing, it doesn't.
So for you, you just don't get why he's over, or for you, you don't understand why it's or
why that gimmick, the wrestler, Damian Miz Dow, Damian Sandow, whatever you want to call
Sandow,
him,
yeah.
Tremendous wrestler. I was
right.
a huge fan of him as, like, your intellectual savior and all that kind of stuff. But this gimmick, I don't get why this is the one where people finally went, like, oh, yeah, I like this guy.
I think it's one of those intangibles, to be honest. It's kind of like, why wasn't Cena over? Like, I get that he's funny, but, like, why was he so over? Like, he was more over than, say... Daniel Bryan before he started doing the yes thing. Because remember, before the whole yes, like, actually, didn't it start at the no, or was it yes that he started doing? I can't remember which one was the first one.
Yes started, but
when he was
started
when he was
as a heel.
Right, when he was
so that's why they did
the no
the bison yes
yeah.
kind of meme
mm-hmm.
for it. And
that's
then,
right.
And then he lost the title, and he flipped out, and he went, no!
No! That's
no.
right. Yeah.
And so he was able to simultaneously create two chants out of the easiest damn thing that...
Right. And that's all him. Like, no one else had done that before. So credit where credit's due. But...
Yeah, right?
Before,
like, him and Stone Cold got...
What?
So easy.
What?
Yes, no, and what? It's like,
yeah. Seriously. Or hell yeah, which is just about as easy. But it's the same thing. But before he was the World Heavyweight Champion, he was Daniel Bryan, great technical wrestler, great indie champion, most people didn't know him. They just thought of him as the guy from NXT that was mentored by The Miz, which was a great feud, but that's all people knew him for. And as great of a technical wrestler he was, and as great, you know, a lot of people liked him for that, people didn't give him the pops that they would give someone like, say, Santino for a comedy gimmick. So again, there's that weird disconnect that me and you don't really understand of, like, why someone like Damian Mizdow gets that kind of pop when someone who puts that much work doesn't. And that's not a smash against Damian Sandow, like, right? Because he's a good wrestler. Even better comedy wrestler, you know, with a good comedy gimmick, because I think it's a genius gimmick. But it's weird that people respond to that faster than they do to a good wrestler.
Yeah, that is weird. You know,
right,
what else is weird about Damian Sandow? How eerily similar he looks to former UFC champion Johnny Hendricks. I remember I sent you a picture of, CM Punk at a press conference, and your only reply to it was, why is Damian Sandow being featured on their thing? And I was like, that's UFC champion Johnny Hendricks. And you're all like, he looks just like him. I'm like, that's his younger brother. And you're like, really? I'm like, no, you dumbass.
He looks just like him, though. Like, there's
they do look really similar. That is true. It's hilarious how close they look.
Maybe that's what's happening.
At that reply, because I never thought about it. And then you sent it was just like the first time somebody told me that, like, Darren Young looks exactly like Cena, just black.
Black Cena. I thought Cena and blackface. Like, what's happening?
And as soon as I saw that, I could never, like, disconnect. I was like, oh my god, he does.
He looks like him.
Clones.
His facial features are identical to John Cena. Like, John Cena has... I don't think John Cena's dad is John Cena's father. I think there's a mailman involved in that equation.
Yeah, Cena Sr. definitely does not look too much like him. But.
He looks nothing like him. And then you see Darren Young, and you're like... That's his brother. Like, they're related, right? Nope.
So there's this, like, really handsome mailman, like, was traveling the country 28, 30 years ago.
Siring all
and just siring these, like, future wrestlers. Like.
Oh, man. He does look like him.
Wow. Oh, man. That's amazing. But, yeah. The Usos, obviously, they won. It was a pretty short match, about nine minutes and change.
A lot of the matches in the show, other than the Triple Threat, were very short. The Triple Threat went on for like 22 minutes, and then the Rumble itself always takes about an hour.
Is funny, because the Triple Threat, if you after watching it, mm-hmm. I was so sucked in the match, I wasn't keeping an eye on the time or like how long it ran. If you told me that match was 45 minutes, I wouldn't even bat an eye. I'd be like, yeah, it was about 45 minutes. Because
it goes by fast.
So much more happened in that match than actually did. Like, 22 minutes, like, if you're, like, speaking, like, it's a long match, but it's by no means, like, this, like, great long debacle. There have definitely been longer Triple Threats and, like, hour-long matches and other stuff like that. So, like, 22 minutes is about, like, main event average, probably.
Right.
And this match was perfect. Absolutely perfect.
Oh, yeah.
But I wouldn't have been surprised if somebody told me it was a lot longer just because of how much happens. I mean,
yeah,
like...
The 22 minutes in the Triple Threat, the amount of action and holds and technique and whatnot, is almost equivalent to the entire hour of the Royal Rumble. Like, I think there's as many less holds in the Triple Threat that there was in the entire Rumble.
I would agree.
The Rumble was a bit slow, especially the first, like, 20 minutes, very slow Rumble. And it didn't pick up until, like, the middle, and then it slowed down towards the end.
Rumbles kind of do that during the portion where one man dominates and, like, keeps kind of clearing the stage. Rumbles kind of feel that way. You know what? We kind of skipped over the Divas.
No, we're not skipping. We're just talking about the Turbo Drag. We're not reviewing the Turbo Drag quite yet.
Oh, okay.
We still have the Bella Twins versus Paige and Natalya. I mean, you can try to make filler out of that, but
you know what?
It is what it is.
This was a good heel squash match that you don't see much of in Divas wrestling, because they do a lot of Divas tag matches, but they don't make it seem like there's actual tag team work going on. I actually felt a lot of tag team work coming from the Bellas, which makes sense because they're sisters and everything.
Right.
But here's the interesting thing about this match was there's a lady I work with who's a good friend of mine and everything, a young woman, and she loves Total Divas.
Right. The demographic that, you know, that show wants is the people who normally don't even care about wrestling.
But, like, all four of these women are on
Total Divas, yeah.
Like, all four of them. But the stars, quote-unquote, of Total Divas are the Bellas.
The Bellas, yeah. Definitely.
Top Bellas. And she's become a wrestling fan much more because of that show, which is awesome. And
hey, whatever works.
Her boyfriend, like, introduced her to it and everything, and, like, she came in through Total Divas and so on and so forth. But she runs up to me, like, as soon as she comes into work, and she's like, "Did you see the Royal Rumble?" And I was like, "Yes, we're doing this. High five." and I was like, "That triple threat," and she, like, interrupts me, and she's like, "The Bellas were so good," and everything. I was like, "They actually were. All right. This is cool." Like,
hey, whatever works. Eyes on the product, right?
Right. But she was sitting there, and she was talking about, like, how she can see, like, how much better the Bellas have gotten over the last several months, and admittedly, they both have. Like, Brie definitely had stepped up earlier, but I think Nikki might have kind of eclipsed her just recently, because
I think, yeah,
she was really good this match. She kind of stole Charlotte's figure four hold over the neck.
Right.
She even did the point where she rolls over onto the stomach and does the face smash while in the figure four hold.
Yeah.
I shouldn't say stole. I mean, it's not like Charlotte was the first person ever to do that, but
yeah. I mean, as long as she asked her, because there is like that unwritten rule of wrestling where if you do a move and it's a signature move, you should probably ask that person if it's okay to copy that move or use that move in your matches, and especially if you're making it a signature.
Sorry, if you're on the main roster and the others on the developmental, like, you don't gotta ask shit. Also,
fair point.
If you're dating John Cena versus Ric Flair's daughter, sorry, there's one that's a little more relevant. Like,
nice. I was gonna say too, like, maybe dating John Cena, even though AJ made that joke, like, the talent can't be sexually transmitted. I think
it can be trained. It can be trained. Well, it's not the sexual transmission of it, that's for sure. But,
who knows?
But there's. Maybe that is how wrestling works. Genetically superior. But it was a really good match, and the heel dominance was shown through really well. They dominated the corner. They just beasted on Natalya. Paige was only in for like a second, and she used that second to do her weird sexual thing. Like, where she just, like, climbs on top of somebody.
Right.
But the Bellas had it pretty well in hand the entire time, and I totally respect the fact that they gave them a fair amount of time for a women's match, 8 minutes.
Yeah.
Usually those are, like, the 4 minute.
Right.
You know,
and it was a tag match, and it was good. I only have one problem with the whole match, which the problem itself causes the root for me not to care about the match.
What's that?
It's a tag match with Divas. Is there a Divas tag team division?
You know what? They're bringing it back.
No, I'm just saying, like, okay, if they're going to bring it back, I'm on board, because they have plenty of Divas now to make it work.
They do have a lot of Divas. Like, it's weird, because we always hear about this, like, depth of the roster issue, but, like, we have so many Divas now. Like, there's a lot of Divas right now.
Yeah, so So if they want to do tag team division for
what
the
Divas, was the last WWE women's tag champions? Was it?
Wait, was it WWE or was it TNA?
Was it the Jumping Bomb Angels?
Was it really?
Oh
my god, that was forever.
I think it's all the way back to the Jumping Bomb Angels were the last WWE women's tag champion. Because, I mean, they dissolved that in, like,
right,
1990. Like.
Mm-hmm, exactly. So because there's no point. Like, you know how you always talk about, you like when wrestling is more sports-like, and I tend to like when it goes, you know, far away from the sports part, where it goes into, like, the crazy, like, Bray Wyatt, Undertaker, and whatever. As much as I like the characters to do that, I still want the format of wrestling, like, the actual format to be dictated by rules. So if you're going to have a tag team match with Divas, there better be a Divas tag team division. Otherwise, I don't understand what I'm watching. Make sense?
Yeah, that makes sense.
So you know, for example, if there's a singles match between two guys that are in their contendership for, like, I don't know, the IC title, I'm like, okay, so that's the IC division. I know there's no such thing as the IC division, but to me, that's kind of like how I read it. If there's a grudge match, I understand that it's a grudge match, but it's usually within a division. Like, they're usually fighting because one of them wants to attain a title, and they're trying to figure their shit out outside of the title so that they can then go back to the title hunt. Kind of like Ambrose and Wyatt, right? How they're kind of like in the main event they skirt around the main event title, but they're not committing to it because they were feuding. You know, same with Seth Rollins. You know, Seth Rollins was obviously going. You know, he's the Money in the Bank winner. He's contending for the World Heavyweight Championship, but he has his fights on the side that he has to take care of. Mm-hmm. I get that. Bella's versus Paige Natalia is a grudge match, but there's no what happens after that. You know, like, what's the end game here? If Paige and Natalya beat them, what does that mean? Do they go after the titles? And
yeah, like,
so,
does
which one
of them get a shot at Nick?
Exactly.
Yeah.
See, that's how my mind operates when it comes to that kind of stuff. So it's a good match, and I would love for them to have a Divas division or a Tag Team Divas division so I could care more. But the outcome of this match had no resonating effect whatsoever.
It did. I wouldn't say whatsoever, because it did solidify that they are good and they can fight on fair ground really well, and dominate even. And it solidified them as both being heels, because we had this confusion of like is Brie just supporting her sister and she's not a heel? No, she's full on a heel. Like, they did the loser thing. They were mocking them and everything. So, I mean, it kind of, you know, forced that to be finished. So I like that. And, you know, whether next month at Fastlane we see, you know, Paige versus Nikki or Natty versus Nikki or whomever.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, soon here they got to start building, because I assume we're going to see not only a, women's title match at WrestleMania 31, but I assume we're going to see AJ versus Stephanie McMahon.
Right.
Like,
which has been hinted at a lot, but they've never committed to it.
A lot, but I mean, like, all the way back to when AJ did the whole, like, boss lady down here, over
yeah,
here.
Yeah, yeah. Didn't they have their first clash at when AJ was the GM? Wasn't that the seeds
yep.
were sprinkled there?
Yep. I mean, it's got about a
2012
about
that's
a 4 year
yeah
of
it was 2012
year kind of spread of
because I was just looking in my old Raw on Hulu. I was looking at Raw, and you know how they have the Raw titles and whatever, and it was 2012 when AJ had her really long story, like her arcing storyline that went through like all the divisions and like everyone was involved with her at some point. And I remember that's when she was the GM. So, yeah, it's been since 2012 that they hinted at AJ versus Stephanie, but they haven't committed to it.
And, I mean, it would be a great one to see, like, for story and for performance, because, I mean, Stephanie's not great by any means as far as, like, her wrestling, but like Vince, like, it becomes a show that really propels everything forward.
Right.
And I mean, there is credit to be given for for her wrestling too, because a lot of the interviews I've seen from several divas, like their dream opponent, tons of them, Stephanie McMahon, just because of all the things that it means to them and everything. Like, there's so much cool stuff you can do with that. And I think it would be better than Steph versus Brie ended up being, partially because that ended with the, like, you know, screw job and everything. And then it kind of died and it just became Brie Nikki. After that, this one wouldn't have that happen. I mean, there's no sister to attack her in or anything.
Yeah.
I mean, Stephanie would definitely have shenanigans, don't get me wrong. It wouldn't be a fair fight. Like,
no, yeah. Like, but that's,
That's the nature of a fight with a McMahon. I mean,
but
you
that's also what Seth Rollins' matches now involve, because now he has, like, his own stooges. Yeah, which is fine, because he's a heel. Like, if you want a heel to be a heel without having, like, an ensemble or, like, a coach or a manager or somebody getting involved in the match, then I don't understand what kind of wrestling you're watching. Like, a heel should have, like, all the advantages towards him.
It's kind of like Stone Cold said. It's like, if you're a heel and you can't cheat, I don't know how you get them to hate you. Like,
right. Like, exactly. Like, you have to make the crowd hate you. Or even people who know, like, there's people who know how everything operates in wrestling, but as soon as they see them get involved, immediately they're like, oh, that's bullshit. Like, they fall into the trap because it's so perfectly designed to make you go like, oh, that's not fair. and that's what it's supposed to do.
Like me with Eddie Guerrero versus Kurt Angle when he took off the boot. I'm like, that's not fair. Completely got me.
Yeah.
Oh, man, I love that. But good tag match, but match of the year? Already, I mean, we're less than a month in, and I think we might have seen it. Strong contender.
Are we talking about the year. Triple threat right now?
Brock Lesnar versus John Cena versus Seth Rollins. And the triple
JJ
threat
security.
With the triple threat for the World Heavyweight Championship.
I have seen this match, and it is January 28th. By the time that we're recording this right now, and this will probably go live tonight. This match happened 3 days ago?
Yep.
I have seen this match 4 times. It's very rare for me to watch a match that many times so close to the live date.
I don't blame you at all. I've seen this match twice myself, because they re-aired it on the Raw and everything, so I rewatched it. There and was like, wow, this was so good. And the follow up, I kind of like the fact that Raw was snowed out because I think it forced them. Wrestling needs more things like they had on this Raw last time, not the replays, but they need more of, like, the guys that were just in the title match or going to be in the title match don't fight on the Raw. Take completely off the show, have it be more other people, and have them have these intense interviews. Because Roman's interview, oh my God, I can't believe I'm saying this. Roman's interview was amazing.
Yeah, can we remember, I think the last time we spoke of Roman was we were talking about him being the chosen one and everything. And remember when I said that as long as they let him be himself or an extension of himself, he's okay on the mic. Because I've seen it. I've seen glimmers into the person. I've seen glimmers into Roman Reigns. Like, or whatever his name is. I don't know what his actual name is.
Leaki?
Yeah, something like that. But I've seen very small glimmers into who he is. And whenever I see those, I'm like, he has it. But it's kind of like The Rock. Remember when The Rock was Rocky Maivia? He was horrible. Horrendous. Horrible on the mic. Horrible character. Everyone wanted him to die. And I don't mean that in, like, a funny way. People were saying, Rocky,
die. Rocky,
yeah, die, Rocky, die. People were wishing ill on this guy for playing a character. When he started playing The Rock, which we all know now is an extension of who Dwayne Johnson is, he became popular. Arguably one of the most popular wrestlers of all time. He is the most profitable wrestler of all time because of how he went into movies, and he's been successful at it. Incredibly successful. So if you let Roman Reigns be himself, just like they did in that interview, because you can tell that's him talking. That's not Roman Reigns as a character. That's Laiaki or whatever. That's him talking. And you can see that.
And yeah, it's that's, much better. That's definitely true. And I mean, the other ones too. Brock Lesnar's interview. I mean, you knew that one was going to be good because Brock Lesnar's been doing these kind of like more real fight atmosphere interviews pre-taped.
Yeah, like him just talking
for months and everything. Yeah. Like the build up to SummerSlam did that exact same thing. It's like he's going to be left in a, you know,
puddle of his
own blood and piss. Like,
yeah.
Like, oh my God, like fantastic. I want to see that. Then I want to see his match. You had Seth Rollins do an interview like that. And then you had like a little bit of the silliness with that cartoon character that's over for some reason, Dean Ambrose.
Right.
He is
a cartoon character though.
He's a complete cartoon character.
Yeah, like. I love him, but he is like a Looney Tune come to life. Well,
once you say that there's a blizzard with a travel ban and some dude's like, I just walked 50 miles from Hartford. I'm like, all right, what are you, Goku? Like, how, like, what? But Seth Rollins, I mean, the way that he like sat there in Brock Lesnar's chair, and then just like knocked the thing over and walked away, like, you got like a feeling of like, Seth's pretty badass. Like, he's not afraid of him. He just like got crushed by this guy the night before and everything. But he put a big hit on him, too. He's not afraid.
Yeah, like, I think...
Normally, you fall too quickly into the cowardly heel. And some people like the cowardly heel as the only option for a heel. A heel has to be cowardly. A heel shouldn't always be cowardly. Like, they're going to use cowardly means, like cheating, but...
Or when they know that they shouldn't pick a fight at that specific moment, they should run away from the fight. But they should still want to kick whoever it is that they're gonna fight's ass. Like,
exactly.
That still should be a thing. Yeah.
Exactly. And that was really cool to see. So more of these things where right before the pay-per-view, you kind of don't see John Cena wrestle in a tag match against, you know, the person he's going to be fighting and everything like that. None of that. I don't want Cena to touch Rusev in the ring until Fastlane.
Yeah, and I think that's one of those things.
No tag match.
I think it's one of those things that because of the way WWE wrestling is, because the way they tour so many, you know, X amount of days in the year, have so many shows that they have to fill the slots for, they wind up sometimes watering down certain matches. Well, like you were saying, Cena sometimes fights. Was that?
I can see it on house shows, because, I mean, like, how else are you going to practice the match?
Right, exactly, I mean, but those don't get televised.
Exactly.
So for
don't
people,
do it on Raw. Yeah.
Yeah. But, you know, like, sometimes they'll have, like, a big title match between Cena and, let's say, Edge back in the day. Cena and Edge, and then there was, like, tag team champion versus whatever heel was the heel that was going for the tag team title. And they would have, like, Cena and that IC champion versus Edge and the other guy. And they would have these tag matches before their pay-per-view. And it's kind of like, I've already seen them fighting, like, 20 times before the pay-per-view. Why am I going to pay $50? You know, nowadays, you know, $9.99. But why am I going to pay money to see a match that I've already seen? And you're just adding, like, a stipulation or a title on the line for me to care, you know? Whereas, like you said, Rusev, Cena and Rusev should not touch. Like, who was it that recently they did a build-up where they didn't touch each other? There was no matches.
It just ended, but they had that NXT one with Baron Corbin and Bull.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, how is the developmental doing better wrestling programs as far as like the design of them? How are they making them better than the actual corporation? Like, I don't understand that. I don't understand how NXT can be such a good wrestling program and be the developmental system when it should be the other way around. We should be seeing Raw sketches on NXT and NXT video packages on Raw.
I think it's because a lot of the NXT guys, like, yeah, there's people like Sami Zayn and Adrian Neville and a bunch of others that had longtime indies time, so I mean, they're, for the most part, their in-ring skills are polished, done. But a lot of those guys, like, they just need to practice wrestling good matches and telling stories in good wrestling. Mm-hmm. Whereas once you get to WWE, you need a lot more of the, like, well, now you got to get good at X, Y, and Z, buddy. Like,
yeah, selling, you know.
Now you
got to
do stories and doing merch and all sorts of stuff.
Yeah, having people, I think it was the Usos during their interview with, I think it was Jericho. I'm pretty sure it was Jericho that interviewed him. I could be wrong, though. It was Jericho. Where they say that once you learn developmental, that's one thing, but when you get to WWE, you have to slow down and wait for people to react to what you're doing in the ring. That's why it's slower. That's why a lot of people don't understand, like, why WWE is so slow. But it's because you're waiting for the crowd to react properly and then keep going to move the story along. Instead of just going so fast that you do 30 moves, people yawn, blinked, missed it, and they don't understand what you're trying to do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so you gotta let them drink it in for sure. But this title match, man.
I don't think there was only one part. Like, if I had to give it a score, I would say 9.9 out of 10, right? And the only reason I'm doing that is because there was one spot, and it was when Seth Rollins did the elbow or splash. I don't really remember what it was.
I think it was an elbow, but it was interesting because he didn't do the Shawn Michaels, you know, heartbreaker elbow that most people do for a flying elbow, where it's that, like, sideways elbow drop. He did it like a frog splash, but with the elbow out.
Mm.
So he did, like, a flat body version of the Macho Man elbow.
Right.
Which I'd never seen before, and it looked cool as hell, but, like,
yeah.
I still have a little bit of wondering of, like, did he actually, you know, like, mess Lesnar up? Like, did he actually break a rib, and then Lesnar, like, just came in and was like, I can do a suplex and a fast.
There might have been a little bit of hurt, because when I watched it four times, like I said, it does look like Lesnar might have pulled something, or something might have gotten bruised.
Well, reading his lips, Lesnar does say, like, I broke my rib to the doctor.
Right, but that could be gimmick, you know?
Exactly.
Like, so, you know, like, that could just be him selling, and him being a really good seller, because Brock, as big and beastly he is, and as dominating as he is in matches, he still understands selling. Like, he still gets it. Like, that's why he's the fucking WWE World Heavyweight Champion. He still understands the role that he has to play. And he's still as good as selling, because I believed that he was injured the whole time. But then I was like, no, I think that's just part of the show. That being said, there was a pause. There was, like, an awkward pause during all of that. And I know that's kind of like, it was story, but because of the awkwardness and how it felt like it might have been real and it might have been not real, and there was a little confusion, it seemed like, between the people running things, I'm taking it at 0.1, but the part that really nailed the 0.1, and this is me being a mark, was when Seth Rollins, I was going to call him Tyler Black, hold on. When Seth, this is why, when he did the Tyler Black, what is it called? I can't remember. I think it was called the Black Hole back in the day. I can't remember the name of the move where he got on the rope and did that. It marked out like a child. And then Brock Lesnar comes out, and, like, before you can even appreciate what just happened, he just comes out like a monster and suplexes him. And you're like, aww. You didn't even get, like, to try and pin John Cena. So, yeah.
That was right at the end of the match?
That was towards the end when he did the splash. Yeah, it was when Brock came back to the match. Because remember, Brock, yeah, it was the beginning of the final part of the match. Because at that point, Cena was out. And then Lesnar and Seth Rollins took over. That's when you had the briefcase spot, when he hits him twice. And he was going to do the curb stomp. And then came the F5.
I liked how Lesnar's head was on the briefcase to get curb stomped.
And he just jumps
and catches Rollins
mid curb stomp, yeah.
But what I saw was, like, where he's landing, like, he's going to put his back onto that briefcase and jack himself up. And, like, so smooth, the referee kicks the briefcase over and everything like that. Like, I like when the refs do stuff like that. They're all like, this guy's going to hurt himself and doesn't even know it. Let me
push
this out of the way type thing.
Yeah.
Like, you barely notice it, but it's just one of those things that I caught during my second view, and I was like, oh, that's why he didn't fuck himself up.
Right, and there's a couple of things that happened in this triple threat. One thing, I had kind of like a epiphany during the tag match. One of them was how much I enjoy triple threats existing, like, in wrestling. Like, okay, so I like boxing. We've discussed this before. I love boxing, one-on-one boxing, okay? Mm-hmm. Boxing doesn't have triple threats. Cannot have triple threats. That would be a fucking mess, right? UFC. UFC is one-on-one.
It would be a complete disaster. Like, every match would be around one KO for somebody. Like,
right, like a triple threat in the UFC, as much as I would pay real money to see this, would be a dude, could you imagine a heavyweight championship match between three people in a UFC cage? Oh my god, that would be pandemonium. It'd be hell on earth. Like, there, someone's head would fly off. Like, literally, would just break off.
You know, it would be something that would be amazing to see, just because, like, the first time they did it, those guys would be so uncomfortable because there's never been anything like that.
Right, exactly. Like, so
you're so used to fighting one opponent that the second you introduce a third variable, it's like, I have no idea how to even move forward.
So we have boxing, yeah. UFC. I can't think of anything else off the top of my head that would benefit from a triple threat. But wrestling.
Well, I mean, shit. Look, even team sports like basketball or football or anything like that. You put a third team in there, it would get really damn confusing about what's going on here.
So it made me appreciate, more so than before, this match specifically this match made me appreciate how unique wrestling is and how unique something as simple as adding a third member to a match, like a triple threat, can completely change the dynamic of a match. We've seen Cena fight Seth Rollins before, right?
Mm-hmm.
We've seen Cena fight Brock Lesnar before. Continuously, we've seen that fight. We know it's usually like a really strong match fight. Triple threats, by just adding one person, in this case Seth Rollins, which, by the way, let's take a minute to thank God that CM Punk left the WWE, and I know this sounds like complete blasphemy coming from me, but let's thank God that CM Punk left the WWE and left the void so that Seth Rollins could step up and become main event material, because not once during that entire match did I think Seth Rollins should be in this match. Not once did I think Seth Rollins is not ready for the main event. All I thought was, like, Seth Rollins could win the title today. Like, he could take it. That's what I, like, he's so good at what he does that I buy him into this. But he wouldn't have been in this position if someone like Punk was still around, because things would have just fallen the way they did before. Hell, Bryan wouldn't have been the main event of WrestleMania last year, so it was more Punk leaving. Arguably. So now I can appreciate the fact, yeah, arguably, we can appreciate the fact that Punk left, because there was emergence to bring people up, and this is a match that this is like the final product, I would say, just seeing him in this match. And again, I can appreciate the triple threat being so unique in that it brings certain things that you can't do in a single match. You can't do what was the spot? I'm thinking of a specific spot where Cena and Lesnar they're grappling, I think. I can't remember the exact spot, but Seth Rollins comes out of nowhere with a knee to the face.
Oh, you're talking about Cena did the three AAs. He did three attitude adjustments in a row. Boom, boom, boom. And I hate that AA is catching on with me.
attitude adjustment.
Yeah, he did three attitude adjustments.
That's you.
In a row, and has Lesnar down, and then Rollins comes in, big knee, knocks out Cena from the ring, hits a curb stomp on Lesnar after three attitude adjustments. One, two, and Cena breaks up the pin count and everything like that. Because you have to assume even Brock Lesnar, after three attitude adjustments and a curb stomp, would have been pinned. Like, that's just the assumption. Like,
right.
Nobody gets hit with that many shots.
I love how he got hit with three AAs, and yeah, I mean, that was insane. Like, I wish that the AA, he did it like he used to do it before, because now he kind of brings you down like a body slam. But remember before when he would just chuck you to the side?
Well, I think he had to in this case. He still does sometimes. I think partially that Lesnar's really fucking big, and partially that he had to set it a certain way because he was going to pick him up and do it again right away. Because that third one, he laid it in pretty hard.
I almost want Cena to have a promo where he's like, adjustment, repeat, adjustment, repeat, adjustment, repeat. Because, like, like it worked. It worked. Like, I was very, like, I was like, oh, my God, what is he? Is this another, oh, my God, a third AA?
Yeah, like, I was like, sitting there. I was like, is this real life? Like,
Is he spamming his R2 button?
I almost was sitting there thinking, like, is he going to do 16 attitude adjustments tonight? Like, I honestly wondered it for a second if he was going to, like, just do AAs the entire match and wreck Lesnar right through there. And it was really impressive to see him do that. Also impressive, Rollins. Randy Orton always has this problem, and and it pisses me off. Randy Orton is a really strong wrestler, top main eventer, inarguable.
Right.
But he's always booked that, like, once you hit him with the finisher, like, that's it. Like, he has to stay.
He rarely kicks out of multiple finishers. He does, happened, but he rarely does.
But, yeah, but for the most part,
Glass jaw. He's a glass jaw.
Exactly. For the most part, once he gets hit with that attitude adjustment, like, he's done. Rollins got hit with a full, like, a good one, and Lesnar was out on the table. Rollins kicked out. Like, at first I was like, oh, god damn it, like, Cena's 16 times, woo, all that kind of stuff. But then he kicked out, and I was like, wow, like, they're making Rollins over. Like, they're pushing him the right way. Like, this is awesome.
Yeah, because he, I'm like, I thought for sure the spot where he took that one AA, that it was a really brutal, like, I mean, he flew in the air when he took that AA. I mean, he slammed hard. And I thought, this is it. Like, this is the match. Like, for a second there, I forgot that Brock Lesnar, you know, like, I know the story is Brock Lesnar is going to be champion at WrestleMania, and we already knew Roman Reigns was going to win the Rumble.
It's predictable, but, like, I've said before, predictable isn't always bad, just because probably about 6 months ago, we were talking and we were like, it's going to be Roman Reigns versus Brock Lesnar at WrestleMania.
Right. We were still lost in the moment, thinking like, oh my God.
It was still like, there's so many ways for this to happen, or maybe it won't be for the title, or blah, 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 blah.
Right.
And just because, like, we're getting that match doesn't make it bad. Like, there's no reason to complain that it's bad, because it's still going to be a good build. It's still going to be a good match. Like, you're acting like Roman Reigns isn't the best wrestler on the roster or the most capable wrestler on the roster, but he's entertaining and he's good.
Right.
And Brock Lesnar,
I like Roman. I just don't care for I don't care for the way they want him to do promos. Because you saw on Monday what he can do.
They've changed back.
They have to. And when we talk about
Shield
the Rumble,
days.
Yeah. Yeah. When we get to the actual Rumble, which unless you want to mention something else about this match, we should be talking about the Rumble soon. But
I've still got a couple things to say on Rollins specifically. Rollins, his landings, like, I know he's a big CrossFit guy. He's huge on CrossFit. He actually had a major article in the Box magazine for CrossFit where he talked about a lot of things that I thought was really interesting. But Rollins, his landings were amazing. He German suplex roll over, land on his feet, counterattack. Attitude adjustment, lands on his feet, counterattack. Like, anywhere you throw him, this guy's like a cat, and he's going to
land on his feet and
do something really cool out of it. And it's like you said, he became the guy who belongs there with Cena, belongs there with Lesnar, belongs there with whomever he faces. Like, Rollins isn't going anywhere. He's made in the shade.
Yeah, like he, like I was saying, he, to me, he's our new Edge. He went from, obviously the Ascension was a little quicker, no pun intended, but I think he became Edge quicker than Edge became Edge, like in the main event, but he just fits there. He fits, like this triple threat just made it obvious to me that he can always be, he can be that thorn on the side of the heel or the face that are having like their thing, and he's like, no, I want to get myself involved, and no one would be like, oh, he shouldn't be there. Like, if anything, you're like, yes, please, like, put him in there, because we know we're going to get a great match out of the other two with him being involved.
You know, now that you say that, the cartooniness, I actually see a lot of Christian and Ambrose.
Yeah, I can, right? Okay, so there's kind of like that going on. So does that mean Roman Reigns is Gangrel, but with a career?
Oh my god, now I need to see him, like, just drinking blood, like, Roman Reigns is... I love that.
Right?
Alright, so, Royal Rumble. And before we talk about the Royal Rumble, I want to say some unintentional advertising that I thought was pretty fun from UFC. The night before the Royal Rumble, they had a UFC fight night set in Sweden with the number one and number three ranked light heavyweight fighters. It was Alexander Gustafsson, ranked number one, versus Anthony Johnson, ranked number three, fighting. And basically, whoever won should be fighting John Jones next for the title. Right. And Anthony Johnson's nickname is Rumble. He's Rumble Johnson.
Right. And
I love the fact that the guy with the nickname Rumble devastated his opponent, knocking him out really quick, and the night before the Royal Rumble. That's nice. Perfection to me.
That's the universe aligning, you know? Like, the stars are aligning. But yeah. So I guess we can stop gushing about Brock Lesnar versus John Cena versus Seth Rollins, which, by the way, was Brock Lesnar's one, if you haven't picked that up by now. Which means Brock Lesnar is going to WrestleMania as a champion. And let's just review something before we get into the Rumble and talk about the winner of the Rumble. So here's what Lesnar has done within the last year. Beat Taker. So there goes the streak. Beaten John Cena how many times?
He didn't beat Taker. He conquered Taker.
He conquered, yeah. He conquered Taker. How many times did he beat Cena this year?
SummerSlam, Night of Champions.
Was SummerSlam the squash?
SummerSlam was the absolute squash. And he took.
Okay, so suplex repeat. So he beat Cena twice by himself. Just beat him. Completely decimated Cena.
Yep.
Okay.
And
what else?
Then he has pretty much crushed the entire locker room whenever they gone against him.
Right.
Ran out, you know, F5 to Kane, F5 to Big Show, like
nothing. Right, which he's done before, but yeah, he's reminded people that he can do these things, right?
Yeah, but I mean, this is, you know, night after Big Show had just, like, gone on a KO punch fest and laid people out, which I do like that they're bringing back the fact that the KO punch is, like, an instant, you're done. Like, as soon as you're hit by it, like, instantly you're out. Which they played into in this Rumble match here. But, man, Lesnar is just unstoppable right now. Completely unstoppable.
So, and that was just this year. So that's without even mentioning former UFC World Heavyweight Champion, NCAA Champion, youngest WWE Champion. What else can we add there? Was he a Rumble winner?
Yes.
He's a Rumble. Okay. What I'm trying to convey.
King of the Ring.
What I'm trying to convey here is the Brock at WrestleMania is going to go in as a champion, and someone is going to beat the guy that has all these accolades. And God help me if the WWE is dumb enough not to mention all the things that I've just mentioned in the video package. They have to mention every single thing Brock Lesnar has done, so that when Roman Reigns beats him, and he will beat him, he has to look like the guy who conquered the guy who was unconquerable.
Because even one Cena has beat the one who
in
was the one
in 21 and one. Exactly. Like if we're gonna make Roman Reigns the chosen one, then by God, make him the chosen. Like, John Cena became the chosen one with only JBL being champion for a year and having the cabinet and having won like 12 pay-per-views in a row or however many pay-per-views he was champion in a row. And John Cena was made when he beat JBL. And JBL before that was kind of a nobody. Because remember, the JBL character just appeared out of thin air.
Yeah, it happened immediately when he won the title.
He just became JBL and he became like this rich guy. Like his character just appeared out of thin air.
He just became a wrestling
God. Like,
no.
Like he was the perfect, John Cena was the perfect foil for him. And that's why John Cena is who he is today. Like, that was the start of like the John Cena dynasty. If Roman Reigns beats someone like Brock Lesnar convincingly, like in the Mark's eyes, like they believe the win, oh my God, like he could be the next guy.
But
it has to be convincing.
This match is going to have everything. They're not going to be stupid when they book this match. They are going to put everything into it. Because Roman is going to have to spear him, Superman punch him, break out like a new move.
There you go.
Drop. Like,
yeah, there has to be a new move.
Sorts of stuff. Like, yeah. He has to hit him with, like, a big callback to his, like, big power bomb and everything, and, like, really lay into it. Look at him up! No, but just really lay in everything and put him down. Because that's what we're going to need to see before he can beat him.
But yeah, that match, and we shouldn't get like ahead of ourselves, but that match should be like legendary. It should be like the thing that it should be something that we haven't seen before. Like, because no one has gotten to beat Lesnar convincingly. In what? How long has he been back?
No one has truly beaten Lesnar since he came back in 2013.
Is that what it was? Like, I think someone beat him. Like, I think
2012. Since he came back in 2012 and beat up Cena, because
right.
Cena beat him. Cena won their match at Extreme Rules.
But it was a hard fought victory.
Well, Cena got the roll up and then collapsed because.
Oh, Lester, that's right. It was the gimmick win. That's right. Him,
like type yeah. thing. Like yeah. he got the roll up and. But Lesnar had wrecked him and everything. And they did the whole, like, it's not who gets their arm raised and the bell rung at the street fight, it's who walks out of the street fight type thing. Because Cena was destroyed, and then Lesnar beat him up again, and Lesnar beat Triple H and broke his arm, and then Lesnar beat Triple H again, and then Lesnar devastated CM Punk, and, I mean, he just has run roughshod whenever he appeared.
Mm.
Yeah, Lesnar is a beast, literally.
Yeah. So this Rumble. Let's talk about this Rumble because Philadelphia for this entire pay-per-view had been a fantastic crowd. So Philly's always been a crowd that I like because they're very vocal and they're like, if they're cheering for something, they cheer throughout the entire match. They're not like some crowds that like cheer for like when someone comes in, but then they forgot that there's a match going on throughout the match. Like, they don't cheer for spots, they don't cheer for finishes, they don't count with the referee, like one, two. Like, some crowds are just bad. Philly's really good about that. Like, they'll count freaking 10 counts. Like, if they're outside the ring and the referee's counting to 10, like for a count out, they'll count from 1 all the way to 10. Then came the Royal Rumble. And boy, did the Philly crowd just shit all over this Rumble. So, did you want to mention, like, how this Rumble was formatted, since you were saying how they're kind of formatted the same way?
So, the Royal Rumble, you have the entrants come out. They kind of fluctuate it between every 60, 90, and every 2 minutes. So, this year, the average was about 90 seconds. I did timing on a couple of them, and some of them were close to 2 minutes. Some of them were, like, closer to a minute. So it averaged to about every 90 seconds a new person would come out. Bray Wyatt was pretty much the star of the show. He came out at number 5. One of the bigger pops for a surprise entrant was definitely for Bubba Ray Dudley.
Bubba Ray Dudley coming back as Bubba Ray, not what was his name in TNA?
Bully Ray.
And yeah. And I don't know if it's the uniform, because you watched TNA more than me, as far as, like, you've glimpsed into it more than I did.
On TNA, he was not wearing the big camo jumpsuit.
Right, and didn't he look more imposing before? Like, just a couple of months ago, he looked bigger. Like, it looked like he just gained all his fat again. Doesn't it?
Yeah.
Tell me I'm wrong. Okay, so I'm not. Because when I seen him, I was like, he looks just like he did in 1999. He's big and puffed out again. When he was in TNA, he looked like a monster.
Vince is like, no, if you're coming back, you gotta be Bubba.
I need you to eat some Cheetos, and I need you to scarf down some Mountain Dew and Pizza Dough. You can't come back all monster. You look bigger than Roman Reigns, for God's sakes. like, what happened? But, I mean, he still was awesome, though. His spot with R2, which I thought was kind of semi-racist, but whatever, it was funny. It's like, oh, because he's a black guy.
He can just be D-Von because he's black?
Yeah! Like, it was so weird. He's like, Truth, get the tables. And I was like, you don't know this man.
I know, like, do they have history? Why?
Yeah, they don't. They have absolutely no history.
But, like, I didn't get the, like, screaming, like, get the tables, and it's like, dude, it's a Royal Rumble.
Well, they've done that before at a Royal Rumble. I'm pretty sure it was 99 or 2000. Monster Truck
Rumble in 99 when, like, Steve Blackman came out with nunchucks and...
Yeah. For no reason.
I think Raven came down with, like, a shopping cart full of weapons or something, like...
Yep.
Oh, God.
Hilarity.
But Bubba went out pretty much as soon as Bray Wyatt came in, tossed him out, and then from there, it was the Bray Wyatt show for the next about 30 minutes.
And I was so happy, because you know I'm a huge fucking Bray Wyatt mark. I'm
a monstrous Bray Wyatt fan myself. And,
yeah.
and seeing Bray just, like, really dominate, like, screaming, this is my year, grabbing the mic and I love when somebody grabs a mic and shoots.
It cuts a promo in a mid-match.
Middle of the Rumble.
Yeah.
CM Punk, the only time he was really, really over with me was when he did that during the Rumble with the Straight Edge Society, when he was doing that savior thing. He's like, put your hand on the screen and feel my energy healing you. And also,
so good.
Fantastic.
I love that he cut a promo and he eliminated, like, what, two, three more people? The Boogeyman, Sin Cara, Zack Ryder. I think it was after Zack Ryder. He
had 4 straight eliminations.
And then didn't he asked for a mic again. There's a spot where he's asking for a mic and they're about to give him, but I don't know if they slipped. And he kind of made, like, a gesture, like, fuck it, like, forget it, I'm not going to cut another promo. And then Daniel Bryan came out.
Yeah.
Which was great. Because this was, like, the rematch to their feud from last year. It's been exactly a year since the Wyatts and Daniel Bryan had a feud. It was actually at the Royal Rumble where Daniel Bryan fought Bray Wyatt.
Exactly.
And then didn't appear in the Rumble, which... miffed a lot of people, and boy, were those people miffed again this year.
Because Daniel Bryan came out, 10 minutes later, Bray Wyatt chucked him out.
And not even a chuck, it was a shoulder push. Daniel Bryan was being eliminated by someone. It was someone else that tried eliminating him. He's standing on the apron, and then Bray Wyatt does a shoulder tackle and pushes him off the apron. And that was the elimination.
So here's the thing. People are mad that, Daniel Bryan was eliminated.
So Daniel they're Bryan also mad
coming
about
back from a major neck and shoulder injury.
Yeah.
You don't want him, because everyone knew he wasn't going to win the Rumble. Like,
right.
There are other ways to get a title match than the Royal Rumble. Like, he doesn't need to win there. That doesn't have to be him. And for him to be in that final four, there's too much going on, especially with the way they wanted to book it. So, like, you wouldn't want Daniel Bryan getting KO'd by Big Show and thrown out that way. Or eliminated by Reigns, because that's going to make them hate him for doing it directly. They can hate Wyatt all they want, because Wyatt's supposed to be hated.
Right.
But for him to be in there too long, the Rumble is 100% on your shoulder. You're pulling people over. You're lifting people up. You're pushing them over. And you're taking, like, big drops and everything. You don't want him in there for more than about 10 minutes, because the last thing you want is him fresh off an injury to hurt himself again. So I don't get why you'd want him to be in there for this really, really long amount of time anyways. Because, again, he's Daniel Bryan. He's a smaller guy, and he doesn't wrestle like a Rey Mysterio where he can do, like, a bunch of flips and crap like Rey did when he won the Rumble. So he wouldn't be doing a bunch of, like, cool eliminations. So why does he need to be the only man to win? I don't completely go on board with that.
Right. Yeah, like, and here's, like, what I don't get. Daniel Bryan was already the champion last year. He because of the outrage of, you know, the Daniel Bryan movement kind of, like, coming to a weird stop, he was added to the WrestleMania via Triple Threat. And that was mostly because of the situation they put themselves in, where they brought out Batista and Orton was the champion, right? And it was kind of like, that's not going to work. You know, like, Batista just came back. You know, like, this was his first match back. And it's really weird to have a person come back after being gone for so long and putting them in the main event of WrestleMania, unless your name is Rocky Johnson. You know, like, unless you're freaking The Rock, it's not going to, or Stone Cold even. I'll take Stone Cold. It's not going to work. This year, we're 1 year removed from, like you said, Daniel Bryan has surgery. So he's still recovering. He's in no position to represent the company, to be the champion, so to speak, right now. He may be by March 29. We don't know that. We don't know how his body is recuperating. Because remember, it took him a while to recuperate because he was trying to use different methods to heal. He was trying to do it naturally. He wasn't trying to do the Cena thing where he gets a surgery and gets pumped up with whatever it is and then does Super Saiyan healing because fucking John Cena is from Planet Vegeta. So there's all of this going on. And we also know, have you watched the Road to WrestleMania Daniel Bryan documentary they did on WWE last year?
I have not.
Okay. So in this documentary, they go through the weekend of WrestleMania, him doing the media rounds, doing the, what do you call that, press conferences, and all these things that he had to do before WrestleMania, during WrestleMania, and after WrestleMania, after he won the title. And by his own admission, he said something along the lines of, like, I'm not really a media guy. Like I'm just a wrestler. So he's not a guy who's comfortable with the mantle of, like, you have the title now, you're a champ, now you have to go and do these media rounds. He's not. He's said it before. Is he happy about winning the title at WrestleMania in the main event? Absolutely. Was he happy with the role he had after that? Probably not. Again, by his own admission. So why would you want to put him in that position again? As a fan, you don't want him to do that. Like, you don't want to put all that stress in him, especially, you know, with the issues he had last year. So he probably doesn't want the pressure of being the champion and having to deal with his body the way it is now. So the only options in the Royal Rumble were, what was it, Wyatt, which is a heel. That's not going to work against Brock Lesnar. Ziggler, which, I don't understand what the WWE is doing with Ziggler, because they have him become stronger than John Cena in one pay-per-view, and then the next pay-per-view he's weaker than Zack Ryder. Then you have Bryan.
I would say weaker than Zack Ryder.
You know what I'm saying, though, right? Yeah. Like they make him so, they make him unbeatable in Survivor Series. Ziggler was like, he went stronger than Cena. Because, I mean, how many things did he kick out of?
Oh, everything. I don't know. For Ziggler, inarguable. His peak was the Survivor Series match. Then he had that tremendous match last pay-per-view at TLC in the ladder match. But there just seemed to be something. It wasn't so much that he was weak. It was just kind of the circumstances and the build that they're putting on the KO punch. That Ziggler went down so fast, because Ziggler eliminated two people in the, you know, what, 3 minutes he was in.
Yeah.
And, you know, theory is, had he not been hit with that KO punch, he would have taken out Kane or Big Show type thing. Right. Theory. You know, that's the way we are meant to think about it because of how hot he was getting. But I think Ziggler still got a lot of chance. And I think very well we could see Ziggler versus Daniel Bryan the setup for a Mania potential or anything along those lines. But Ziggler definitely could have been a winner. Someone else.
Wyatt should have been. Wyatt could have easily been the star of the Mania. It's just that from a story point of view, it's really hard to get behind a Wyatt versus Brock Lesnar match. Because the characters just wouldn't work well together.
Same thing. Dean Ambrose. He could, but
let's talk about that real quick. Dean Ambrose versus Brock Lesnar would be great in the sense that Ambrose is fearless.
Ambrose versus Brock Lesnar would be great as the main event of Fastlane or like another pay per view.
Yeah,
it's not a WrestleMania build and everything, because, like, great, Dean Ambrose is fearless. He's going to go out there and he's going to put everything out and he's going to put a big thing. But, like, WrestleMania has to have this grandiose story. Like,
Exactly. It has to be the buildup of something greater than. And I think the ascension of Roman Reigns to be kind of like the chosen one and beat this monster that's been rampaging through the WWE for arguably 2 years, if not, let's go for a full year. He has a full year of just being a monster that no one could do anything against.
Yeah.
So.
And then Daniel Bryan. Yeah.
Oh, and again, yeah.
You could, but I don't know. Like, I think Lesnar versus Daniel Bryan would be great. And it was the only other potential, like, other than Reigns, that I could seriously take.
I don't understand what it is about Roman Reigns that makes the Philly crowd so hateful towards the idea of him being built. You know, like, Bryan has been built.
Because 1 year ago, they were sitting there looking at Roman Reigns and Batista.
Yeah.
And the hate that came out and everything. This was Roman Reigns' year. Why is Batista winning?
Yeah, and to go, we want Rusev? Like, really? Rusev is the guy you think is ready?
Yeah, really? Right? Rusev.
Like, that's the gimmick? That's the wrestler you're with? Rusev is good at what he does. It's a nice gimmick.
Rusev versus Cena is going to be fantastic.
Like, right, like, I'm not saying he's a bad wrestler.
But Rusev versus Lesnar?
You're
going to be cheering Lesnar, like...
Yeah, exactly. Lesnar
become a face? Is that what happened here?
And think about this for a second. Think about, like, this retarded idea, because that's what it is. It's a retarded idea. And whoever's offended, there's the door. But think about Rusev versus Lesnar, and think about Rusev winning. Is that really the guy you want to inherit the mantle of the one who beat the one who was the one who beat the one in 21-1? Really?
What? Just because of my love for the Sheik, yes, I do want to beat him. And then that way, the person who beats the one who beat the one who was the one in 21. That person would be over, like Rover. Like, that would be amazing.
Yeah, but, I mean, I think at that point it's too far removed, because when someone beats Roman Reigns, no one's, that's, it's going to be gone. The line is going to be gone. I think you need...
So you mean when John Cena beats Roman Reigns?
Right, like, whoever beats Roman Reigns after he wins the title, is they're not going to inherit all of this. Like, you know, like, this is an immediate inheritance. Like, it goes from Brock to the Chosen One. After that, it dilutes. It absolutely dilutes. So...
If you beat Brock, though, don't you have a feel that, like, that person's gotta have, like, a six-month go of it? Like,
oh, no, yeah. Roman Reigns, when he beats...
He's gotta hold that belt
for a while. Yeah, he has to hold that belt until at least after Survivor Series. That's the only acceptable time he can drop it.
My only thing here is... I wanna see them book... main events differently than we have for the last 5 years. I don't want to see anyone get a title match against Roman 2 months in a row.
Oh, so you think okay. So
typically, I mean, it's almost inarguable, but for the past about 10 years, we've seen the trilogy. It's always three matches.
Yeah.
You always get three matches. And it'll be Taker Orton, Taker Orton, Taker Orton, and then new program for Taker, new program for Orton, 3-3-3.
Yeah.
Everything like that. And it's the 3 month program. No. You get the shot against Roman, Roman beats you, back in the line.
I think here's basically, like, in my world, how the Roman Reigns title range should go. If we're doing just 6 months, right? He should have a match in every pay-per-view with a different person. Those people should be Daniel Bryan, right?
Mm-hmm.
That needs to happen at one point. Dolph Ziggler, again, that has to happen at one point.
Mm-hmm.
John Cena, obviously, has to happen at one point, because that's John fucking Cena, right?
Absolutely.
Dean Ambrose, in some capacity, that has to happen.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And then, I don't... You know, if you want to put Rusev Seth in there, like, hold on. Let's say Rusev does not get beaten by Cena. Then Roman Reigns is the only other person that has to beat him then. Because that's like how the story has to go then. If Cena failed at Rusev and Brock, then you have to make Roman be the guy to take it. So people can go like, oh man, like he beat another person who Cena couldn't beat. Again.
I would argue that Daniel Bryan should be the one to beat Rusev. If they do not have John Cena beat Rusev at WrestleMania, you have a couple months later he fights Daniel Bryan and Daniel Bryan taps him out in the middle.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, and I mean, not that Daniel Bryan needs to be made in any way, like he's been made and remade, but the last person, the absolute last person that Roman Reigns should fight. And as the only person who I think should take the title from him, just to enable the feud of all feuds, should be Seth Rollins.
Mm-hmm.
If someone's going to beat Roman Reigns, have it be Seth Rollins. Because then you make the transition of like, oh man, Seth Rollins all this time has been trying to get the title from, you know, Brock Lesnar, Cena, whatever, couldn't make it, but he got it from the guy who's beaten them before. And true. Again, you make Rollins, not only do you make Rollins, but then you can actually set up a rematch between Rollins and Romans, and just for shits and giggles, if Ambrose was involved in the title match before, have him in there. Make the triple threat of the Shield for the title.
I agree with that, and I can see all that. Personally, what I think is, since you're not having the Elimination Chamber at the former Elimination Chamber pay-per-view. So, you got Fastlane and
Fastlane, yeah.
What you do is Mania's end of March, right? So that means April doesn't get a pay-per-view. So May, you have him fight John Cena or whoever. June, you have him fight Daniel Bryan or whoever. So on and so forth for 5 months.
Right.
That gets you to, let's see, May, June, July, August, September. Mm-hmm. That gets you right up to the Survivor Series. Five different challengers in a row. Roman beats them all. You get right up to Survivor Series, main event of Survivor Series, Elimination Chamber. All five of the people Roman just has beaten in a row.
Nice.
And that,
oh, that's right.
And he loses.
There we go.
You
have
to beat five opponents straight.
Yeah.
All of them now get to go at it together.
Yeah.
Like each of them, Roman beats them, but there's a moment in the match where, like, they could have had it type thing.
Right.
And you finally get this one, and Roman goes down. He's still strong and can make his comeback at any time.
Right. But because it's not a loss that hurts him.
Yeah, exactly. People aren't sick of Roman because, like, after 6 months, people start going like, Super Roman or something like that.
Right. So take it,
like,
away.
He goes down. He doesn't have the title. He lost, but there's still more to go.
Unless, I mean, take the title if it becomes like, oh, Super Roman's, but what if, I mean, if his momentum shifts and people are actually behind him now? And again, that's why you need heels in between there and some faces, just to try different mechanics and see how people respond to it.
Of course, if it'd be a mix. I mean, you'd have like Roman,
I think the good thing about...
And Roman, Bryan, and Ambrose would be like your face side, and then like Rollins, Bray, and Ziggler, who I always think Ziggler is going to make a heel turn.
Yeah, he's better as a bad guy. Like, I don't like him as a good guy. The show off gimmick is tailor made for a heel. Like, you can't be a show off and be a good guy. Sorry, like, that doesn't work. Like, you can't be. What's the word I'm looking for? You can't be that flamboyantly showboasty and be a good guy somehow. You know? Like, that doesn't make sense.
True.
It's like Mayweather. We love Mayweather, right? But he's like a natural heel in the things he does because he's so flamboyant. Like, he throws money away. Like, like, he smokes money. Like, he does ridiculous things with his money. He's a heel. We like him because he's very, like, he's true to himself. Like, Ziggler, if he's true to himself, should be a heel. He should not be trying to, like, get the crowd to cheer for him. Like, he should be telling the crowd to fuck off. So. But, yeah. So, anyway, so that's the Rumble before we, like, go into, like, all this WrestleMania and post-WrestleMania plans. Now, like I said, I like the Rumble. I like the decision they made. Was it the best one? Probably not, but I like it. I like the decision. I like where it's leading. I'm a big proponent of Roman Reigns as the guy. Could there be other people that are slightly better? Of course. Does it make sense as a story? No. Like, Roman Reigns is the only one that's story-wise, he's the only one that makes sense.
I agree with you on that. As far as the Rumble, I mean, the whole canceled WWE Network thing and backlash against it, I don't get it, and I think it was mostly just whining against the fact that Bryan was eliminated, period.
I think it was.
I thought that the Rumble was actually really entertaining and really well set pretty much the whole thing. I was never bored at all during the Rumble. My only change that I think could have made the ending a lot better, you bring Kane and Big Show in about 5 to 10 spots earlier than they actually came in.
Yeah.
Have their devastation occur there, and then eliminating a bunch of big people, and then have Roman dump them while there's, like, three other dudes in the ring.
I think the mistake they did at the end there was having Roman Reigns take him out, like, because they were distracted. They should have done him just picking someone up and throwing them out, like Cesaro style.
I'm fine with him eliminating them because they were distracted and fighting with each other, and, like, if we were waiting for number 26... to come out and they had this whole setup where it was just those two and Roman in the ring that were left, and then Roman dumped them and you see Roman standing strong in the middle of the ring, and then 26 comes out and it's him and Ambrose and they like rumble a while, and you have that final four is more of a Roman, Ambrose, Ziggler, Bray or something. It could have gone a lot better. And it probably would have gone over better with the crowd. Because I think that team-up devastation is what pissed people off. But, like, you see Big Show's face when the crowd boos, like, this hissing boo against them because they're teaming up on everyone. They dumped everyone out, and now they're about to dump out Roman. Mm-hmm. And Big Show just starts laughing.
Yeah.
And everything. And it's just kind of like, guys, like, they're the fucking heels. Like,
yeah.
You're supposed to be mad about this.
Yeah.
Laughing at you because he's a heel.
Yeah.
But, like, your good guy dumped him. Why are half of you still being children?
Yeah.
And like, well, it wasn't the right face. Like...
Exactly. Like, I don't know. And the other like, the other thing is...
There's for a supervillain killing everyone in the town. And, like, I don't know, Daredevil saves you? Are you gonna boo him because he wasn't Spider-Man?
Yeah, you're gonna be like, Spider-Man should have saved. Yeah, there you go. That's it. It's like a Valley Girl game. Oh my god, like Superman or Spider-Man should have saved me, not you. Oh, that's exactly what the IWC.
Oh my god, I didn't want to be saved by Luke Cage.
Because you're black.
So good.
Jesus. Yeah, that's for. And you know what? All this crying about cancel WWE Network, and it trended. And it trended in the gazillions. Like, it trended hard. Like, I saw the numbers. It was trending hard. And what happened? Fucking,
they reached
WWE Network, yeah, 2 days after that whole shebang happened. So, they're profitable. They're not going to change their plans at this point because they're making profit. And you know what? They shouldn't change the plans because it's a good plan. It's not like last year's plan. Batista versus Orton, that was a horrible plan.
I know, it's a horrible plan. Absolutely.
Yeah. This is a good plan. Not great. I'm not saying it's a great plan. I'm saying it's a good plan. It's better than having two has-beens. Okay, maybe not has-beens. That's a harsh word. So what I'm looking for two people who had their spotlight
it's
already.
Having a part-timer and... a guy who's never been, like, beloved anyways.
Right.
And everything. And neither of them are going to be working face. Like, Batista coming back as a face has never worked.
No. Like, he just works. Even now, after the movie, after Guardians is out, I don't want him as a face. He works back. Hell, in the movie, he was kind of heelish. He's kind of a heel, the way he acts.
Yeah.
Like, that's his appeal. So, yeah. So... Fuck you, Philly.
Just in general, fuck you anyone who did the whole cancel WWE Network, because, like, guess what? If you have any care about wrestling to the point that, like, you would have subscribed your $9.99 just to watch the Royal Rumble, guess what? If you're interested enough that you're just going to watch the Royal Rumble, you're going to watch Mania. And are you going to watch it for $65? No, you're going to get your month of WWE Network for that, too.
Yeah, $9.99.
And so, like, you're going to come back in 2 months anyways, and you're just going to cost yourself Fastlane and a ton of fantastic NXTs and original programming just to miss, save $10.
Yeah. And all because you wanted the guy who, by his own admission, says that he doesn't really enjoy... The role of champion, you know, like
that same interview where he said, like, I just wanted to stand there with the title, but they wanted me to, you know, raise my arms up and hold them up high. And,
right? Yeah. He exactly. Like he
stole my moment type thing.
Yeah. Yeah. Like he's not a guy who wants to be the champion in the corporate way. He wants to be the champion in the way. Like, me and you, you know, would dream like this to say, like, oh, we're the champs in WWE, but we wouldn't want to deal with all the bullshit that goes with it, you know?
I actually only want to deal with the bullshit.
That's because you love drama.
I never want to go into the ring, like, at all. I just want to be presented the title and then do a bunch of media.
Nicely done.
When are you going to defend the belt? Never.
Never.
I will retire champion.
Worst champ ever. They'll strip you of the title.
So, like, they're trying to strip me of the title and be all like, I will defend my title next week. Oh, I'm injured. No contest. No. Well, I would be the best heel champion of all time.
I don't know about all that. So, any parting thoughts about the Rumble? Because I can't think of anything other than... I can't gush about the Triple Threat enough. I really can't.
Brock Lesnar is unbeatable, but Roman Reigns is going to do it, and I'm for it.
The Reign Empire.
With that Spartan punch.
Yeah.
Rebranding.
Yes. Spartan punch, yeah. I really want him to get a new finisher, just for that match, though. So it has to happen.
Oh, it's the evolution of the game.
Yeah, nice. Let's see what you did there.
Thank you for joining us. We'll see you again in 1 week with another brand new episode of the Cyan of Regan podcast. As always, I am Cyan of Flame.
And I'm Strawhead Regan.
Wepa!
Sign out!